Oh, look at this. Banky's already written the bloody intro while we've been gasbagging.
Yep. Welcome to GCP Bytes, episode number 29 for Friday, the 7th of November, 2025. GCP Bytes is a podcast where we discuss Google Cloud and tech. And I'm your host, Stephen Bancroft. On today's show, you get an outage, you get an outage, you get an outage, everyone gets an outage. Google Q3 results are big. What's going on at Optus? Plus, what's real and what's not? VO 3.1 makes it really hard to tell. But before we get to any of that, I'd like to introduce the co-host of the show, Dave Wall. How are you, Dave?
Oh, I'm doing great, mate. I was thinking about rolling out some DNS changes to Google this week.
Yeah. Don't do it. Plus our very own GDE, Ian Brown. How are you, mate?
I'm good, Becky. How are you, mate?
All right. I haven't caused any outages this week, thankfully.
I'm disappointed in you. Everybody else seems to have, so why should you be the old one out?
It seems to be, doesn't it? Wow. So do we have a little breakdown on what happened at AWS. Just reading the article here, the official root cause attribution is given to be a latent race condition in the DynamoDB DNS management system that resulted in an incorrect empty DNS record for services regional endpoint DynamoDB.us East 1. So. And it failed. The automation failed to repair it.
So this to me. Do you remember Wally? The two little robots that are fighting each other.
Yeah.
This is that to me. This robot's putting the DNS record on. This one's deleting it.
It's quite interesting, actually, reading their post-mortem there. You've got, it's like, okay, this system creates plans, and this system then applies plans, and the one that was applying. Has a cleanup job at the end, delete all the old stuff, and it just happened to be like one applying machine, runner that just took ages, and then so a new one came along to do the work and put a plan in, and then the old one put his plan in, which was out of date, and then so the new one was like, well, that's out of date, let me blow all that away. Goodbye, entire zone.
Yeah. But it does say that the DNS and actors sometimes come in contact, but it's usually unproblematic. So they knew that these two were interacting together, but just had a little time bomb sitting there waiting for them.
Yeah, yeah. But I suppose if you're looking at this and you do see them come into contact, but you haven't seen any evidence of it causing an issue before, you're like, well, okay, maybe it never we're never going to have an issue here. So why spend engineering hours on it?
So, race conditions, hey, they're going to get you. They're going to get you.
Yep.
But the thing about it is there must be so much dependency on that zone, right? We've got 12 nines of availability and, we don't depend on any one single zone or location. Yeah, BS.
Except for the very first one that was ever created, US East 1. Right.
Yeah, and then, okay, so yes, this takes down DynamoDB and then a few systems that require on DynamoDB go down and then the systems that your company use actually rely on something that relies on something that relies on that DynamoDB instance.
Yeah.
And then that's why it propagated so badly, right? It's not just one service that goes down. It's the entire house of cards.
As has been reported, the internet was down.
Yeah. It turned off everybody's internet connections.
Yeah. The internet was just fine. Yep. I'll go back to using my unencrypted FTP sites. Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah.
Not GeoCities. GeoCities never went down.
Yeah. Not ever.
An ICQ.
Yep. Oh, God, ICQ. The little flower icon.
The little flower icon, that's right.
I haven't seen that in years.
Ah, oh, they were the days.
That and Winamp.
I still use Winamp.
Listen to all my music on Winamp.
Yeah, no, the Winamp's great. I still use it. I use it as a little preview app because it's so lightweight.
Hmm.
It's the previous CPV5.
Yeah. Back then it wasn't.
No, that's right. Microsoft. Microsoft didn't escape the scourge.
They were feeling so smug.
Yeah, they were feeling so smug. Microsoft Azure, the company's massive cloud computing platform, said it started experiencing issues about 3 a.m., blaming an inadvertent configuration change as the trigger event. Well, what a surprise. Someone changed something and it broke.
So this one, instead of being DNS, which is it, like, that's a very critical bit of infrastructure for the internet to work.
It's always DNS, right?
But this one was Azure Front Door, which is their CDN.
Right.
So all the things that Azure serves depends on that CDN to deliver all the JavaScript and all the images and all the rest of the bits and pieces. And, it went wayward. And it didn't just affect Azure. It affects Office 365 and Outlook, and it also affected, I was just reading, Minecraft.
Minecraft, yeah. Oh, I can't have Minecraft out.
Yeah.
Everything that's, in the Microsoft stable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So an inadvertent configuration change, it sounds like they need a better configuration management tool.
Well, they could use Forme.
Forme. I look at this. This looks really cool. Forme.
Yeah. Yeah. So Forme is a 100% cloud-based agentic IAC tool. So it uses a different language from we all use Terraform. We've been using Terraform for more years than I care to remember. And we all know that Terraform is built on HashiCorp's markup language, right? So HCL is their language. Forme is not. It's written on PKL, which is a different language, which looks sort of similar.
Is it pronounced pickle?
Probably.
As soon as I saw it, I'm like, pickle? Is it pickle?
Yeah. We call it pickle? But possibly. It might be called pickle. It sort of seems to me a little bit like writing like a React front end. With the way it does an import and the way its blocks are declared, it looks sort of almost React-like.
So, like, I was reading through the blurb on this, and, I mean, if it does what it says on the tin, I'll be super impressed, because from what I could see, it's like, well, everything is code. The state is in the code. You don't have a separate state file. You don't have to manage that, which is great because state file management sucks.
Yep.
So everything's in the code, but it's supposed to be like self-healing and work with other systems. So if I deploy something with Forme, I build out an environment, a GCP project, and I put some resources into it, and then I go into GCP and I click up something in that ends up in the code.
Yeah.
And I don't know how that happens. Want to see.
Yeah, that's right. And I don't either. So I think it might actually be a case of if you click up something into existence in GCP and then you put the code into Forme, it's automatically in state because the state is actually the code. There's no state file per se. It is the code. I think that's what they.
That's right. I mean, that would make more sense because the only other way I could see it would be if it's like just discovering everything in the environment and converting whatever it sees to code, and then checking it in itself.
Yeah, that seems dangerous though.
Gonna have to build something with it.
We might have to run up a little project.
Yeah. Right? The only issue that I've got with it is that it uses a cloud platform that goes offline a fair bit. I don't know. Someone mentioned something about them suffering a DNS issue or something. I can't quite remember.
So a lot of the examples are AWS, I've noticed.
The supported infrastructure is AWS.
Right. So there's no GCP provider at the moment.
Not yet. No.
Okay.
Right.
So, slight downside there.
Yeah, that ever so slight downside. I'm sure it's going to come along in the future, but yeah, it's literally a first fly type tool. It's its first real run in What am I trying to say here? I don't know.
It's the first cut at it.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see how that pans out. I mean, I wouldn't mind giving it a go. It's another thing, though. Curious to see how it does that self-healing. It's supposed to be a genic, right?
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, anyway, link in the show notes. Go have a look. But what happened during the fortnight, guys? We sort of jumped ahead there and got all excited about the outages. What's this about an arcade machine, Dave?
Oh, okay. All right. So now that I'm about to move out of my garage and I'm about to, you know, move into the factory location, so that settles today. Well, yesterday. Yay. For people listening. So very excited about that. But I'm like, okay, what am I going to do with my garage? I'm actually going to have my garage back.
And put a car in it?
There's no way that a car is going back in that garage.
It's far too nice for a car. It's got air conditioning.
It has air conditioning. And it's got like ceiling and stuff. It's really quite nice in there. So I'm thinking I'm going to turn it into a bit of a rumpus room. I want to get the floor sealed. And I want to get an arcade machine. Like, I've used Batocera for like retro gaming. I'd kind of like to have a cabinet, and you know, I think it'd be pretty sick to have some sticks there, but I'd also like to have like light guns and things as well. Yeah. You know, do some Time Crisis House of the Dead.
Yep.
You want like the two player, or are you going to go all out with the four player style one?
Well, I did actually go a little bit down a rabbit hole, and I found a place that sells like the Daytona USA like cabinets. I'm like, hey Trace, can I buy a four Daytona setup?
Well, then you're kind of stuck playing Daytona though.
I know. Like, it's not going to happen. I'm not going to drop like $20,000 Daytona machine.
Yeah, that's a lot of coin.
Yeah, it is.
Can you build yourself one?
You could build a pretty radical PC sim, race sim setup.
Yeah, I am not going down that rabbit hole. That gets way too pricey for me. And if it really, I was going to do it, it'd be more of a space sim one anyway.
Yeah.
It is something I'm definitely looking at. I'm trying to work out. There's like a whole bunch of places that sell like new ones and you know,
kits. You can get like kitchen build. Yeah.
Yeah.
Pick everything you want to put in there and then build a PC up and it's inside with Batocera or MAME or whatever.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a thing that I want to do. I think I'm going to turn that into a bit of a cool rumpus room place. And you know, then less fun, but I'm making the migration from Google Work. Well, not completely from Google Workspace, but I've got my Entra ID tenant now, and I'm moving all my auth across because I Google credential provider for Windows has burnt me enough times. I'm done. Yeah. I'm done. I'm going back. I'm going to be using Entra. I'm going to be using Intune to manage my Windows machines. Sorry, Google, the device management just doesn't cut it for me anymore.
It is pretty average. I'm in the process of doing a federation between Entra and Google Cloud or Google Cloud Identity, just for a business that I manage.
And how will you do? Where are you going to have your source of truth? This is the thing that I'm trying to work out, because I kind of want to keep my workspace, but where do I want my entities to exist?
So for this company, their source of truth is Microsoft 365, because that's what they use and have been for years. And people have been named accounts in Google Cloud, which is not cool. So what I'm doing is federating the two together and putting a set of groups in there that all configure to roles and, yeah. They'll get some access to it. We can remove the named providers.
Cool. But yeah, so that's the thing that I'm learning all at the moment. But I did work out that I can enroll a couple of my Mac devices into Intune, so that was kind of cool as well.
Yeah, that is really cool. And because you're looking for a main machine, I've loved this. I've been running a RetroPie for years and years and years. I love those old games. But on the power usage front,
I've, what have you done to your caravan?
I put a 500 amp shunt and inverter into the caravan.
Mm-hmm.
And my calculations when I was looking at the there's a tool online for there's a company down in Victoria called Solar for RVs, and they produce a calculator that you can put in all the different current draws and all the different bits that you've got in your caravan. It'll tell you the cable sizes that you need. So. Right. I'm going through all of this, and I'm like, right, I've got a 2,500-watt inverter. I've got a shunt. I'm going to need at least 200 amps of delivery to power that inverter at peak load. So I was looking at it going, well, I can put 70 square mil cable in, but that's 200 amps. So you go over 200 amps there, and you're technically outside of the classification for that. Yeah. So that's 10 gauge cable. It's big stuff.
Mm.
So I went, well, no, I can't.
But you don't want your caravan to burn down.
No, that's right. So I was like, well, I'm going to have to go 20 because then that's 95 square mil. That's, and you have no idea how big this cable is. Like, I am serious. It's,
you need specialist tools to cut it and
yep.
strip
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Like hydraulic crimp in order yep. to actually compress the lugs down onto it. It is
how can the any drawer in a caravan be that much? Like, your house doesn't draw that.
12 volts, though. 12 volts at 200 amps, then so you're taking a really low voltage and a really high current, and you're essentially in the inverter swapping them. So you get a high voltage and a low current.
Wow!
Yeah,
that's right. Because your power is going to be the same, right? And power is voltage times ampage.
Yep.
So you lower the voltage, that'll increase the ampage if you want the same power.
Yep.
Right, and so you need the cables to be able to handle the heat.
Yeah, because the current draw on it generates loads and loads of heat. So yeah, really big cable, and I'm talking easily 20 odd mil across. It is massive stuff. And just trying to sort of feed
it. You've got to find someone to feed that through.
Yeah, well, we had to drill a couple of holes in the caravan. I've got to plug them up with some silicon today. But feeding these cables in is next level type work, because you've got to try and bend these cables in into these. Yeah, it's huge. So anyway, myself and the Sparky, it took us about four and a half hours. Mate came up who was a Sparky and we did it. Yeah, took us about 4.5 hours to get it all in. And I screwed it all in last night soon because we all just left it in place and tested it all. Screwed it all in place and tested it again. And now we can run the air conditioning on the inverter in the caravan. I kid you not. Wow. I was like, I'm just going to.
5 minutes.
No. According to the current draw, we will get about 50 minutes out of the batteries that we've got.
Okay.
So
enough to cool it down and yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But then the batteries are dead.
Yeah.
But I mean, at the end
but
of the day.
But it's a hot day and you've got the solar panels going as well, that'll extend it a little bit more.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, we got 400 watts of solar there, but that's nothing compared to the, what's 12 times 200 amps? Yeah, that's a lot more than 400 watts.
Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm not an electrician, right? Obviously, so you're able to run the AC on 12 volt as long as you throw enough amps at it?
Well, yes, sort of. So the AC actually runs on 240 only. So it's going through the inverter. So the inverter is actually powered in via a changeover switch to our mains in the caravan.
Yeah.
So we've got a changeover switch there that has three positions. So you can have shore power, you can have off, or you can have inverter. And then so what you do is you hit the breaker on the shore power, which disconnects it, and then you take it off shore power, you turn the inverter on, wait till it goes green, and then flick it onto inverter power, and all of a sudden you've got 240 volt all through the caravan again.
Right, and shore power is the term like used from like if you were had a boat and you were plugging it in.
Yeah, it
is actually shore.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
the marina power.
Yeah, well, shore power is any mains that you can plug into it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So yeah, you've got an external connector that you can plug a 15 amp lead into, and that gives you your shore power. But yeah, this is the air conditioning runs on 240. it draws about 1700 watts. So it's pushing the inverter pretty hard, but it works.
And does that inverter double as a BMS, or have you got a separate BMS?
No, the battery management is in the batteries themselves because they're all lithium batteries.
Right. So they'll charge when you're on shore power.
Yep.
Could it not just all be 240? Like, could you not, like, could it not all just be 240 volts and not have to deal with the step change from 12 to 240? Like,
well, it comes out the batteries are 12 volts.
So the batteries are 12 volt and they're DC, and mains is AC. And so you've got to change it from direct current to alternating current. Because if you start pumping direct current into things that are alternating, it tends to hurt them.
It's not like that.
Yeah. They're not a fan.
Obviously, the problem with going through running 240 stuff from an inverter, it is very inefficient.
Oh, right? Yeah.
So you get losses when you convert it. You've got to run through bigger, fatter cables. So you've got losses there.
Right.
If you can get a device that can run on 240, but it also has a 12 volt option, it's much better to run it on the 12 volt. And you don't have to go through all that.
Yeah, 100% it is.
Yeah, to convert it all. But if you're running a big AC, that's unlikely to have a 12 volt thing.
Yeah, and look, the test of the inverter was, can I run the AC? Because I know that the inverter draws 1700 watts of in 240, so it's not quite 10 amps, it's like 8 amps or something at 240 volts. So I was like, well, if it can run that, then I'm happy. It can do anything that I need it to.
Hmm. Yep.
Nice. Yep.
Very good. Well, my little tech adventure is not that exciting. I rebuilt my home theater PC, and I rebuilt it all with secondhand parts and junk parts.
Was this literally the thing that you threw in the chat the other day, the photo?
No, photo was – how cool was that, though?
That thing was so cool.
I think it was all 3D printed, and they'd built it out of Dell small form factor machines.
Yeah, some USS.
It was like a
stuff.
Carry case thing, and it had a Unify access point on the side.
Yeah. Yeah, I was looking at that going, what the heck is that? It's so cool. It's like a little portable data center.
Yeah, a little portable data center.
Site in a box.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep. Yep. And in one of the other photos, I don't know if you saw it, they used a M.2 SATA splitter. So to make the RAID array, they had like 6 SSDs or something, or 7 SSDs in there. And I've got to go and look this up. I've been meaning to, but you can get a SATA splitter that goes into an M.2 slot, and it gives you like your 6 SATA ports.
Yeah, wow.
I never knew such things existed.
Well, SATA is serial. You can chain serial. So
Well, there you go. Anyway, I rebuilt my home theater PC, and it's good. Now I can, mainly because I wanted to sit on the couch and play games, like sitting at my desktop here and playing games, you know, with my thing here. It's just not the same experience. I want to lounge back, right? And, it works great.
Nice.
Put Steam in big picture mode, click through there, and you're away. Yep.
Happy with that.
Got to be happy with that. All right. Well, look, that's enough banter for now. Let's get on with the community news. All right, Ian, take it away.
Righto. So a couple of these we've covered last fortnight, but we'll cover them again because they are in the coming weeks, and I want to give them a shout-out. The first one off the list is GG Cloud Sydney has their Gen AI Academy workshop. That is at Google Sydney at One Darling Island. Yep, in Piedmont. It's on the 11th of November, so in a few days' time, at 4:30 p.m. So RSVP to that and off you go. GDG Canberra. We covered this one last fortnight, but I'll cover it again because we don't hear from them very often. They're doing their 2025 DevFest for AI and Cloud Solutions. That'll be held on the 20th of November at 5 p.m. And it's at Canberra Innovation Network, which is at Moore Street in Canberra. Next one on the list is GDG Melbourne. These guys always do a really good coding night, so they've got their November coding night on. It is at the Mantle Group head office in Melbourne. on the 19th of November at 4:45 p.m. Hobart, another one that we don't hear of much. 12th of November, they have their 2025 DevFest for AI in Action and Career Insights. That starts at 4:15 p.m. and it's at the Centenary Building in Grosvenor Street in Sandy Bay. And last but not least is GDG Perth has their 2025 DevFest on, AI Careers and Community, they've called it. And it's at the Mia Yalagonga Building, level 5, tower 2/5, Spring Street, Perth. And that's
I love those names in Perth.
Oh, they do. And that's on 7th of November at 7:30 p.m. That's it.
All right. DevFest everywhere. Yeah. Everyone gets a DevFest. Very good.
Better than an outage.
It's a DevFest fest.
Well, make sure you check those out and try and get along to one of those. Well, all right. With the community news done, let's get on with the news items. And first news item this week is a finance story, big finance story. Alphabet reported quarterly revenue of $102.4 billion for the 3 months ending September 30.
Three-digit billions. That's many billions.
It is. I heard a bloke once upon a time said that more billions are better.
I mean, it's rumored to be true, but
yeah.
I'm going to require more data.
Yeah, I think we did mention this last episode anyway, but this article goes into a little bit deeper. It's the sales growth was driven by Google Cloud, which saw revenues rise 34% to $15.2 billion from $11.4 billion.
Yeah, it's there you a huge go. Jump. Mm.
It is, and that's higher than their prediction. So they predicted 14.8. Or analysts did at least, and they were 0.4 over, which is pretty good.
Yeah, and this note from Sundar Pichai here saying that we've signed more deals over $1 billion through Q3 this year than we did in the previous 2 years combined.
Yeah, that's huge.
TPUs for everyone.
Yeah. 90 deals in 90 days.
Now, I wonder how much of that came from the Broadcom stuff.
Okay, I don't think the Q3 numbers will show that because the Broadcom rug pull happened kind of mid-September.
Yeah, okay.
All right. The Q4 numbers will have a lot of VMware engine stuff in it.
Yeah. Right. Everyone's scrambling to lock in their licenses, yeah.
Yeah, so I expect Q4 to go through the roof then.
Yeah, I'd expect so too.
Mm.
Right.
And then Q1 of next year for it to all go through the floor.
Well, at least VMware engine, right?
Yeah.
You know, but I'm sure the AI spend just keeps on going on that money go round, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. We're going to get onto a little bit more of that shortly. But, yeah, clearly fueled by the AI spend. Now, I keep seeing articles and YouTube videos talking about, you know, the state of, you know, the economy in the US. And if they weren't spending money on AI, they'd basically be in a recession at the moment.
100%. Consumer spending has absolutely plummeted.
Right? Yeah, right.
So, and I'm like, you know, hell, I've got a business that sells to consumers in the US. It is soft as there.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
And then you got to remember is that their government has now been shut down for 36 days. So if you're a federal government employee, of which there are millions of them, you haven't been paid in over a month. Right, so air traffic control.
Ouch.
Nothing. Right. So, it's real soft.
Right. So they're not spending money. That's money that's not coming back into the economy.
But if
you have to wonder how long this bubble is going to last, because it's a bubble that we're talking about here, right? And we've not sort of delved into this topic on the show, but it's an AI bubble, and it's gonna pop.
When one company can invest $100 billion in another company, so that company can buy products from the first company, and then that counts as $200 billion worth of economic. Yep.
That sounds a bit dodge, really.
Doesn't it? Yeah. Where else have we seen this kind of money manipulation happen, right? Around the year? It's happened before, but not to this level, I would say.
Yeah, I've been AI so out of touch. Just insane.
I've been so out of touch with what's going on over in the US of late. I just haven't been game to pick up the news articles because I'm like, oh,
it's depressing.
what sort of nonsense is going on over there this time?
Yeah,
it's a daily update.
Well, and that's it. So I've just gone, well, instead of just reading all this nonsense every single day, I'm just going to detach from it for a bit. And
yeah,
I mean, it's probably healthier. Yeah. To be honest, like just don't look at it. Just be like, wake up every morning, and go, ah, oh, we live here. Mm. Great.
Yeah, and it's hot.
Hot for you. It's very reasonable down here today.
But you can't ignore the AI bubble. It's definitely, it's blowing up every day, getting larger. So
I miss being able to buy graphics cards at a reasonable price.
I know. That's how come I was able to get mine. It was okay. And speaking of the bubble, we have Anthropic making a deal with Google. Anthropic has signed a major deal with Google Cloud, and it's said to be worth tens of billions of dollars. Insane.
Yeah. So apparently they do have a fairly long-standing partnership, this article says. Their chief financial officer, Krishna Rao, has said, Anthropic and Google have a long-standing partnership, and this latest expansion will help us continue to expand the computing power we need to push the boundaries of AI. Great. Basically, what they want is access to Google's TPUs, so that they can better train Claude.
Well, yeah, Anthropic Unique Computing Strategy focuses on a diversified approach.
Yeah,
uses three chip platform, Google's TPUs, Amazon's Trainium, and NVIDIA GPUs.
Yep.
They want to diversify, and look, I'm sure there's pros and cons to each platform, and different models will train differently on each types of chips. So that's
interesting that Microsoft don't have their own AI chip, like Amazon and Google have got their own TPU and Trainium. I suppose it's just another thing that Microsoft can't break.
I think Trainium hasn't been around for that long. Like, no. Google's quite a few generations deep on TPU. I think Trainium was more Amazon playing a bit of catch up. Like, they'd done some great things with their Graviton CPUs, like bringing ARM in years ago.
Oh,
awesome that they were doing that kind of work. Yeah. But their TPU kind of solution has not been, as mature.
Yeah.
So I'd be surprised if Microsoft didn't come out with something because they're going to need an option.
They can't
just going to want to pay NVIDIA for everything.
Yeah. I mean, the NVIDIA GPUs are great, but they cost some coin.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. We'll see in a minute or later in AI Wars how much they do cost.
Mm.
But, it's money go round again. See how that pans out. But while Google are getting all the money, they're going to spend it on data centers. Google raises 2025 CapEx estimate again to $91 to $93 billion.
Yeah.
Significant increase in data center spends for 2026. They're going to spend more in 2026.
Yeah. So they were predicting to spend $85 billion. That was in their Q2 estimate. Which was an increase from the Q1 estimate of $75 billion, and now they're up. Like that's a big jump. $6 billion is a minimum is a big jump.
If the federal budget came out, right? So like it's March and it's like the 2026 federal budget comes out
for a country,
for Australia, right? For Australia, the finance minister came out and said we are going to spend $95 billion, not on a nation building project over like 10 years. We're going to spend it this year, and then next year we're going to spend another. Like the media would flip its lid. Spending nearly $100 billion. A year on infrastructure.
Yeah, that's right. Well, and well, you
have a fast train study in that price.
You look at their quarter, their last quarter was $102 billion in revenue, right? So of that, what's the profit margin on that is whatever it ends up being. It's like, I think it's like 16 billion or something. It's not a huge percentage. Let's call it 15%.
Yep.
So they're spending more than their profit margin on data centers by a long, 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 long way.
But I mean, it's CapEx. You depreciate it over a long period of time, and you know, they're anticipating future revenue off the back of it. So great, but
and it seems to be working.
Yeah,
this is the thing. It seems to be working. That CapEx spend, by the way, around 60% of that is on servers, and 40% is on data centers.
Yeah, it says in this article here that they've also signed significant deals. They call that significant deals with the UK's Ministry of Defence and ServiceNow. And they're also backing TerraWulf and FluidStack's joint venture. Interesting. They're spending money hand over fist.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, they're quite liberal. Like, you know, we have it. There's a process internally called PSF, and it's Partner Services Funding. And, you know, we can go in and Google will pay for us to do work at a client's, you know, on a client's side, because they know the benefit of that, you know, to keep that client, that customer happy and keep them on board is going to pay off in the long run.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is you bring a partner in to the customer enablement, and then the customer will continue to pay for the services.
Exactly.
Long term.
Exactly.
So you're an upfront cost.
It actually, when I was at Metal Group, we were competing on a product, on a thing between the CASNA team and the AWS team and the Azure team. We're all competing on the same thing.
Yes.
And Microsoft actually took it out because they just went, we'll pay for all of the partner implementation and we'll pay for the product for a year. You just got to sign a 3-year deal.
And that's
what they do. So they just,
and they know they've got them for more than 3 years.
Yeah,
this is the thing.
Because once you've built it in Azure, it's so hard to move it to anything else.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's interesting how much money cloud providers will spend just to get you into the cloud.
Yeah. But just going back to that infrastructure spend, what does concern me, and this is going back to the bubble thing again, 60% spend on servers now. We know that they have a short lifetime.
Yep.
Right. So you spend all of that money on those servers, and then within 12 months, they're going to e-waste. Well, okay, maybe not 12 months. No.
We can run them a little longer than that.
Sweat them out a little bit.
3 longer. Years.
Yeah. But it's, they're ephemeral, right? So they don't. It's not like a building. You build a building, and it's there. Well, although probably these data centers are built pretty cheaply now anyway. I don't know. It just seems, you know, it's something set up to burst, right? It's set up for a bit of self-destruction. I don't know.
But you've got to spend the money on the servers anyway, because it's the core thing that you're selling is access to those servers.
Like, and they have been so capacity constrained, right?
Yeah.
So it's not even really speculative. It's like, we need this because I've already sold it to somebody.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So you have a look at, like, everything in GCP is built on one of those servers. So it makes sense that they're spending such a large amount of money on servers themselves. I mean, it's all their custom kit anyway. So I'm assuming it doesn't cost them a huge amount of money. It wouldn't be like, oh, here's a Dell R640 or something and it's going to cost you $25,000. I would be very surprised if their servers cost them $25,000 each.
No. They're producing such huge quantities of them.
And they're fairly bare bones. Like, when you see the Google racks, like the photos of Google's racks, they're not servers like you and I think of servers, or the average IT professional thinks of, like, a Dell server, an IBM server, or a insert manufacturer here. These are fairly bare bones, like a main board that sits on a shelf.
Yeah, just sort of plugged in.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Well, there you go. There's some spending. Looking forward to some big finance stories in 2026 with some big spends. But on the flip side of the coin, there's been layoffs They might be spending money, but they're also sacking people. Amazon reportedly set to lay off up to 30,000 corporate employees in massive workforce cut.
Yeah, so this is – so they've said that this is on the back of overhiring during COVID. I'm skeptical of that because, you know, COVID has been, at least in Australia, declared done and dusted for at least 2 years. So I don't know about that. And they also did back in 2023, I think it was, they also laid off 27,000 people. So
right. You got to ask, where are these people coming from?
Yeah.
And this article does say it comes at the same time Amazon is investing heavily in AI.
Yeah, so Andy Jassy is a CEO there, sent a memo out to all his employees. I love that word, memo. It's so 1990s.
Memo. Imagine being on a piece of paper and being
Literally.
Desk,
literally.
The memo says you need to put cover letters on your TPS reports.
Yeah. and we want this memo in triplicate. but anyway, he sent an email, memo out to the entire workforce that was going to be impacted, saying basically that you need to get on board with Gen AI and start learning Gen AI so you can be a credit to the company. Otherwise, your job's basically going to go away.
You're out the door. Yep.
So you can see there the ability of AI to take some jobs that can be automated.
Yeah, I mean, how many are employed at Amazon?
About 350,000 thereabouts.
Yeah, so in Seattle headquarters, it employs roughly 50,000 corporate and tech workers, and another 12,000 in Bellevue. According to this article.
Is that 350 include AWS and Amazon?
This just says Amazon.
Still lighter.
Everything. Right. Okay.
It said here. Yeah, so.
It's not AWS shedding 30,000.
No.
It's the wider.
Okay. All right. Yeah. It's the wider Amazon. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, they got to go somewhere.
Well, there you go. 1.54 million workers. Amazon reported 1.54 million total employees as of June 30.
Oh, there you go. Yep.
Wow.
That's a lot of people.
Say it here, yeah. Up 3% year over year.
Yep.
Wow. And the majority of the workforce is made up of warehouse workers. Okay.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a constant drive to automate that as well, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because machines tend not to make mistakes like humans do. Not unless they're programmed.
Speaking of making mistakes, you nearly ruined my segue there.
Sorry.
Microsoft accused of misleading 2.4 million Australians over M365 fees.
Could you really classify this as a mistake, though?
Oh, it sounds like it's very intentional.
Yeah. accidentally on purpose.
Accidentally on purpose. So the crux of this is Microsoft, they said they made an announcement with regards to the M365 billing and said, we want to let you know about a change to the amount of your next payment. Unless you cancel 2 days before Saturday, April 9th, 2025, we'll charge $159, including taxes, every year. We'll tell you if the price changes. Cancel at any time to stop future charges or change how you pay by managing your subscription in your Microsoft account. And what they failed to say is that there was an option not to get charged.
Yeah, so they bundled in Copilot into the Microsoft 365 Personal Edition and then bumped the price by $50 to cover Copilot.
Mm.
Which, I mean, if you're going to get Copilot for $50 a year, that's pretty bloody good. But the issue here is that they've not given people the option to say, no, I don't want Copilot. Don't give me this nonsense. I just want your Office suite. And that's it. So the ACCC is actually seeking penalties, injunctions, declarations, consumer redress, and costs. So it's going to cost Microsoft a fair penny if the ACCC wins. And under Australian law, the penalty could be the larger of $50 million or triple the financial benefit from the conduct. So if they've got, let's say they've got 1 million people in Australia that are
getting charged
this extra money, the ACCC will seek $159 million from them. Because their financial benefit is the full $159 per person. Yeah, yeah. Not triple
the financial benefit.
Yeah, or triple the financial benefit. Sorry. So it'll be
$450-ish.
Yeah. Half a billion.
Wow. Half a billion, yeah.
I bet they don't, though.
I bet, no, they won't.
It's funny because it's if they didn't offer the classic option that didn't have Copilot, there wouldn't be a case. If it was just like, well, the price is this now. And off you go. If you still want the service, this is what it costs, and now it has Copilot.
Yeah.
The only reason is because, well, there was also an option where you could opt to not have Copilot and not get the extra charge. So if they hadn't offered that, there'd be no case.
That's exactly right. And that's scary in itself because that means any company can come along and just go, we're just going to change the price now. We're going to jump it up by $50 a year and you don't like it, stiff.
That's nothing new.
No, I know. But, but
late stage capitalism, that's just what it does.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. That's the old bait and switch. Mm. You know, that's the classic Evernote tactic.
Oh, yeah.
Get everyone used to it and then, oh, by the way, we're going to charge you now. What?
Yeah. Yeah. It's about the time that I went, right, I'll be finding something different.
I'll be moving off your platform. Thank you very much.
I remember Evernote being really nice a decade ago when I first used it.
And then they burnt their bridges and I've never used it again.
That's it. Yep. That's it. All right, well, we'll be keeping an eye on that story. Also in the government sites, Optus. Now, and literally as we go to air, Optus has had another outage. I caught the story last night due to some vandalism. Some fibre optic cables were cut in the Hunter region of New South Wales and they had a big network outage in that area. And, AAA calls through Optus weren't available because of it. They all flipped over to Telstra, fortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got some details on the actual 000 outage that did cause deaths. Basically, this is an article on Australian ABC. Basically, in short, Optus waited almost a day before it told the public that its 000 outage caused 3 deaths while executives held several meetings and prepared talking points. I mean, just typical, right? Just typical. The chief executive, Stephen Roo, has resisted calls to resign. I don't think he's going anywhere.
No. But I think an example needs to be made here that this is not acceptable because people died as a result of this. This was it goes on to say that, they didn't advise ACMA until later and they didn't advise the government, like the actual communications minister at the same time as the ACMA. There was a phone call to the chair of the ACMA to say, hey, we've screwed up. But the minister wasn't involved in that call. So they had no idea about it until the ACMA told them. And then it all sort of exploded. So they've gone and very tactically bought themselves nearly 24 hours of time to prepare for the onslaught of questions that they were going to get. And I think that's not, I hate saying not in the spirit of the way the legislation's written, but it's not.
Yeah. So look, it just sounds like they tried to cover it up. Yeah. Right? And just hope it would get fixed before anyone noticed.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen.
You've got to think about the shareholder value that we were delivering in that time.
No. It's all about the shareholders. But the article says here, so they believed it was only 10 calls that were affected. So, like, they were believing only 10 calls had been affected as they'd been told the day before. That was the ACMA. Had been told it was only 10 calls. And then all of a sudden they revise that it into, oh, it was hundreds. And, you know, three people died, and there was phone calls to, like, the South Australian Premier and to the WA Premier to say, hey, look, some people tried calling 000, they died, we're sorry.
Oops.
Yeah. Mm. That was an oops on our part.
Mm.
We promise it won't happen again.
Probably.
Maybe.
Probably, maybe. Now, to dive into the details of exactly what went on, we do have some information on that. And now, Optus had outsourced part of their part of their process to Nokia, part of the upgrade process to Nokia. And apparently all the documentation was produced in-house in Optus, handed to Nokia, and Nokia went off and did the actual changes. Now, to do that, they have this soft lock, hard lock business going on at their border gateways, and they were supposed to put this soft lock in place, this soft lock, hard lock in place, which allows current calls to continue but prevents new calls coming through.
Mm.
Now, they had an old version of the change process. They ran that and it didn't apply this lock properly. And what it meant was that calls were basically being routed through to the equipment that was off and just going to dead air. No calls were getting through at all, including 000. Now, it still flabbergasts me that they don't have a separate network or a separate routing for 000. Why don't they have that?
I think the first issue I saw with this was that okay, yeah, they've outsourced the process and that's fine.
Mm.
But the process was actually peer reviewed by three different Nokia engineers before it was enacted, and none of them picked up that, hey, we're not using the latest version of this process manual.
Well, from my reading, that's supplied by Optus to them, and they may not have known that there was a newer version of this process manual.
Yeah, okay. That's fair.
Right. Failure at many levels, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it seems like it was just a complete cluster, the entire thing.
Mm. So Optus are going to be insourcing this process now.
Yeah, well, they're talking in this article about creating 150 additional new staff roles to in a process center of excellence, in order to address all of this process that they were missing.
Right, so you're going to have one group that's across all the processes. I mean,
that seems highly unlikely.
It seems highly unlikely. Yeah, how are they going to know every process? Yeah,
yeah. I don't know. So, yeah, the issues that I see in this article with the way that the firewall update was done. Yeah, it seems like a lot of things went awry. Mm. There was a lot of process that wasn't followed. There was issues on Optus's end, not advising that there's a new process document that they need to follow. I think there was process issues on Nokia's end on not checking that they were using the latest process and the actual implementation of it, and not backing it out immediately when it broke.
Mm. Yeah, because that's the interesting part. Why did they not immediately employ their backout steps?
Mm. Yeah, and this might be another one of those process things where the backout steps weren't detailed well, or they weren't detailed at all.
Or they're out of date for the equipment.
Or they're out of date for the equipment, yeah.
That's probably more like it. Yeah. Triple Zero saga continues. And meanwhile, you've got a bunch of Samsung phones that are being taken offline by Telstra because they don't dial 000 now.
Yeah.
I think they were missed in the 3G shutdown. And we've gone into depth about that as well in the past. All right. Well, yeah, we'll keep tracking that story. And there's a big inquiry going on about it. And Gladys Berejiklian's involved, the previous New South Wales Premier. Oh, I'll tell you what, she was a premier during COVID, and she was, you know, she was good, you know, like people seem to like her, but after that, everything she touches just turns to poo. But
remember that, like how it was like she was like kind of reigning supreme, and then all of a sudden was like, oh, what's this? There might be a little bit of a little corruption sniff, and she was immediately quit, just straight away.
But my so what's her actual role in this whole debacle?
She's on the board or something.
Oh, is she? Oh, yeah. Of course she is, a politician getting rich off their connections.
Of course, yes.
I mean, that's why you go into politics.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get on to some security news. Security news.
Security.
And this one's a whopper. I had fun reading this one. EY exposes 4 terabyte plus SQL database to open internet for who knows how long. Dutch cybersecurity outfit says its lead researcher recently stumbled across a 4 terabyte plus SQL server backup file belonging to EY exposed to the web, effectively leaking the account and consulting Megacorp's secrets.
Yeah. So
just there.
just sitting there in a bucket somewhere. So it was a SQL back file. And inside of that were API keys and auth tokens and session tokens and service account passwords, user credentials, you name it, like everything known to mankind was in it. A hacker's delight, this thing. But the researcher downloaded the first 1,000 bytes of the file and found that the back file was also not encrypted.
Oh, boy.
And it was exposed via a classic cloud bucket misconfiguration. You know, the old
chestnut.
The old, I'm just going to set this to public for a second because I can't work out how to back up my SQL box to this bucket.
Oh.
And then in 5 minutes' time, I'm gonna make it private again once the backup's finished. And then, someone's already downloaded it.
Yeah, well, this is what they say in the article. It was very reminiscent of a similar breach where the engineer was caught being lazy during a database migration and not wanting to deal with the extra hassle. I simply set a bucket to to public for 5 minutes, downloaded the full SQL database backup to migrate and made it private again.
You know,
too late.
All that extra hassle of setting a bucket to private and then creating a set of a JSON key and using GSUtil to push the backup across.
Well, not even that. You use the secure URL thing and share it via that. You know, you don't even need to do the JSON key thing.
No, that's right.
What do they call that? That's your thing. You know what I mean. Just that's enough. 5 minutes is enough, and it's discovered. The private bucket, the public bucket is discovered, and you're done. You're breached.
That's it.
So they told EY about this, and of course they scrambled. And apparently the response was pretty good, but it does say here the security firm praised EY's response as professional and effective, and a week later, the incident was remediated. Still took them a week.
Well, they had to get the partners involved, you know, and there was a couple of lunches and no one, how much can we build a client for this? And then,
and no one knew how to get access to the bucket.
I thought everyone knew how to get access to the bucket. I thought that was the problem.
Yeah, everybody except the people that needed access to the bucket knew how to get access to the bucket.
They were probably waiting for a platforms team to approve the code.
As ridiculous as that sounds, that's probably exactly what happened. No one knew who owned the bucket or what project it
was.
No
one had access to the project that the bucket was in and just went, you know, this thing's been getting packed up to this public bucket for God knows how long. And the dude who originally set it up has now left, and he was the only one who had access to the project.
Classic.
Yeah.
Buckets get you every time.
Yeah.
They do, yeah. And when you create a bucket now in Google Cloud, it's got the big scary gram that comes up and says, you know, this bucket will be private, and then when you go to click it to make it public, you got to like click through like two or three things.
What are you doing, you idiot? Stop. Yeah.
Sure.
Are you making a website? You can just imagine Clippy sitting in the bottom right-hand corner. Are you building a website? Would you like some help? Or are you just exposing a SQL database backup?
You look like you've got copies of people's passports in here. Would you like to make it public?
Yeah. we laugh, but it is serious stuff.
Speaking of serious stuff, let's get on with the AI war.
AI wars.
GB300s, Google's new instances, the A4X instance, the A4X Max instance, and I was shocked when I read this. it just sat me back. The A4X Max instance, each featuring 72 Blackwell Ultra GPUs and 36 NVIDIA Grace CPUs connected by NVIDIA NVLink.
Yeah.
How much, man? How much does it cost?
How much? It's exactly what I thought. How much? So I went and had a little look.
And you see your little AI startup.
Yeah.
You got your little AI startup. You want it Bancrosoft, exactly. You want to run an accelerator optimized A4 high GPU 8G. You want to run it for 1 month. In Australian dollars, that'll cost you a cool $98,000.
Mate, that's pocket change. Give us four of them.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's a lot of coin.
$100,000 for a month to run one of these bad boys.
Are they available in Sydney?
Probably. No, that was US Central.
Oh, no, no.
Is
no,
that on demand pricing? I'll get some cuds on there.
I've got to get a cud on that one.
Yeah. That'll bring it down to at least, you know, 89,000.
Bargain.
But staggering 72 Blackwell Ultra GPUs.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. The A4X Max delivers 2x the network bandwidth of the A4X, which was based on the NVIDIA GB200. Each GB300 NVL2 offers 1.4 exaflops of compute. Four times the increase in LLM training and serving performance compared to VMs on the H100 GPUs.
You remember when the H100 GPUs came out and everybody was like, oh, my God, these are the best GPUs ever.
I know. Well, this is what I'm saying. Like, they're e-waste now, effectively.
Yeah.
Like, it just blows my mind. How many swimming pools is that? How many Olympic-sized swimming pools? It's just every time this comes out, the scale is staggering.
And then Microsoft comes along and goes, you know, we're the first ones. We've deployed a cluster of 4,600 of these things. Because, you know, $96,000 a pop a month.
Yeah.
You know, that's...
money's nothing to these guys now. Like, it's just doesn't matter.
And then AI Cloud Provider Lambda, which I'd never heard of. I had to go and sort of try and figure out who these people are. Revealed last month that it deployed at least one GB300 NVL72 system. And they're probably in the process of going bankrupt right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, not cheap. Does lots of things really quick, though.
Will it play Crysis?
No.
That's the question.
No.
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 No. Old school RuneScape only.
Yeah. World of Warcraft.
But can it be hacked? Can it run a Claude skill, and can the Claude skill be hacked? That's the question.
I mean, probably, actually.
Probably.
More than likely.
Likely, actually.
Yeah. Very likely. And if it does, then you can use the old white-on-white hack.
Old trick.
That old nut.
Been tricking school kids for you know, at least 12 months, that one.
Yeah, that's right. Well, someone's decided that they're actually going to use it for realsies. So
let's just back up here a little bit. Let's just talk about Claude skills.
Yeah.
So, because we never mentioned this on the show, but I thought this was really cool.
No, you go.
So this article goes into the release of Claude skills is an incredible moment for AI. So basically Claude skills, you can bundle up all your AI and your actions and everything you want it to do into an app. Basically, and you can download an app, and it's like an AI-enabled app. I thought it was a cool idea.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So you package instructions, resource, and code into a shareable format, which, you know, could be a PDF, could be a zip file, could be a whole heap of things. But there's a security company out there who's demonstrated a logic-based attack that bypasses both humans, their own visual checks, and the platform's own guardrails, which is obviously a fairly critical flaw.
Mm-hmm. And how have they done it? Tell us how they've done it.
Well, the anatomy of the hack is an attacker creates a genuinely useful skill, right? So in the instance example they've got here, it's called Financial Templates, promises to create professional-looking invoices. It's packaged as a zip file with its primary resource, a PDF named financialstandards.pdf. A diligent user, we all go in, we unzip the zip file and check it out to make sure that it's not nasty. So we download the skill, we unzip it, we have a look at the financial standards, we have a look at the skills.md, which is a critical file in Claude Skills, and we see that it calls for the references/financial standards PDF, gives some fairly good instructions on how to use it.
Oh, looks good.
Looks good. Open the PDF up. It looks pretty good. It's got some invoice formatting requirements, got some calculation standards, some customer support contact information. Looks mint. Let's crack on. What they can't see is there's an invisible sentence in there that uses the very simple and very useful white-on-white text.
Mm-hmm.
A malicious but plausible-sounding business instruction has been embedded into the document. This text is completely invisible during a normal preview, but it's perfectly readable by the machine because the machine doesn't see the white text on the white background. It sees the actual ASCII in the background or the ASCII text. So what it does is it creates an invoice. It follows the instructions in the skills MD file, opens the compromised PDF that then downloads this PDF injection.txt file that has some corrected information in it.
Yeah, the text says something to the effect of the text above is incorrect.
Yeah.
This is the correct text.
Use this billing email address instead.
Yeah. That's right. And so what you get is an invoice that looks perfectly legitimate but has the wrong details in it.
Mm. Yeah, you could use this to harvest all sorts of information, couldn't you?
Oh, you could. Quite easily.
So you should be pressing Control A. And then hopefully highlighting any malicious text in there.
Yep. Yeah, that's the simple solution to this is open up a PDF, Control A or Command A if you're on a Mac, and you'll see any hidden bits of blocks of text that are in there, and you can sort of highlight them individually and copy them out and then copy them into a text file to see what they do.
And it's not the first time we've seen that, right? I mentioned it earlier. This is what teachers were doing to circumvent kids using AI on their assignments. They put something in there about elephants and then suddenly that appears in the AI output.
You'll be doing a maths exam or an English exam on like Shakespeare or something, and then they'll put something about flying elephants or something in white text, and all of a sudden if they're using ChatGPT to write their English assessment, here's this big blurb about flying elephants. Great idea.
Yeah, right. So be careful of that one. And finally, to finish the show up, VO 3.1 has landed, and it's getting real, really getting hard to tell the difference between what's real and what's not, I have to say.
This is VO, the video generation model designed for creativity. New enhanced capabilities give you control like never before. Let's take a look. You can use a reference image, a location, a character, object, or a combination. VO puts them together into a fully formed scene, complete with sound.
Hello, is anybody here?
Great moments don't need to end. You can extend your clips and transform any shot into a full scene. And for ultimate narrative control, define the start and end points of your shot. VO bridges them with epic transitions. You can also reimagine any shot by adding or removing elements, from subtle details to impossible objects. VO matches scale, lighting, and shadow for seamless results. All this with astonishing detail, real-world physics, and cinematic outputs. Bring it all to life with audio, using sound effects, ambient noise, and dialogue.
Just gotta listen.
Push creativity to new limits with Veo. Start creating today with Flow.
So yeah, go and check out the blog. You can. One of the things I thought that was really cool about it is you've got a guided generation process now, so you can take some reference images. And on the blog side, it shows, you know, a squiggly pattern and some balls, and then it creates a video of the squiggly pattern mapped onto the balls, and then the balls are bouncing around.
And then you can extend on that video as well, so you can take a short clip. And you can get VO3 to actually extend that into a minute long or a 2 minute video. I did notice in the example that they've got of the scene extension video, some of those cars that are in that video actually float. Like, and not by a small amount, like they're halfway between the two levels.
Yeah, I know. That is a bit sus, but it looks very gamey to me.
Yeah.
That's sort of probably been trained on some game video, but I'd love to see it when you can get real time frame generation. I mean, that's just going to change the gaming world, right?
The other one that I found really interesting is the first and last frame generation. That's really cool. You can take two images and you can tell it, so this is the first frame and this is the last frame transition. And so you could transition from, you know, any one image to any other image, it'll just do it.
Remember when Michael Jackson did that in a film clip and it was groundbreaking?
Yeah.
Now we can just do it on our computers.
That was a long time ago though, mate.
I know.
But yeah, really, really cool to see. Like the videos actually look pretty cool. They're not super duper realistic, but I think that's just the videos that we've got. Like the examples that they've got?
Yeah, they are. Show the one, watch the one that you would have just heard in the clip just then where they're talking.
Yeah, that one is, that one's really good. But the example ones that they've got below that they're generating with Python, they don't look anywhere near as realistic as that first video that we've showed in this.
Yeah, you're going to need a few A4Xs to do that.
I can't afford it. I'm sorry. I don't have that much money to burn.
Well, it's been a great show, guys, and I continue to be astounded, you know, every week with the stuff that's coming out. The money that's being spent and the technology that we have access to is just, you know, even working in the industry just blows me away every week. If you want to continue listening to the show and continue finding out the goodness that we have at our fingertips, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube Music. Go to Apple Podcasts, write us a review. That'd really help the show out. Also, go to YouTube, start the discussion, and smash that like button while you're there. You can contact the show, contact@gcbbytes.com.au, and find us on the web, www.gcbbytes.com.au. And don't forget, today's sponsors are Hivetech Solutions, who've got a new warehouse, Technofish Consulting, and Mantle Group. It's been an awesome show, guys. Anything else from you?
No. It's time to go and deploy some stuff.
You deploy the stuff. I will watch you deploy the stuff, and then I'm going to go get the keys.
Nice.
Yeah, I've got to go set up some DNS and try not to break it while
I'm
there.
Good. Roll it out.
All right. And we'll see you later. Bye.
Bye. And I've got a dog that is adamant that he needs to bark at everything.
Oh, yeah. I got one of those dogs.
And he literally he sits down beside me here and he sticks his head on the louvers over the side there. And the minute he sees something move, he barks. I'm like, you need to shut up.